from the wilds of Staffordshire, facing the cows. Welcome to the GCN show.
Welcome to the GCN show.
Coming up this week, road racing is struggling for participants. But could that be about to change? We think one event might have struck upon a winning formula. See what you think.
We've also got some hot new tech from Colnago, cyclist airbags, and a brand new competition for you. This week in the world of cycling, we learn that the 24-hour record for cycling on an indoor trainer has just been smashed. Matthew Lefthand rode 1,046 kilometres on Zwift at an average power of 273
watts. Wow. It should be a Guinness World Record when ratified. And while it can't, of course, be compared directly to the outside world record, I will, of course, compare it anyway. It's 20 Ks more than the seemingly unbeatable Christoph Strasser record.
It's the average power I can't get over.
I know.
Oh my goodness. How much does he weigh, do you know?
No idea.
Okay, we'll get back to you next week. We also learned this week, though, that the solution to the dangers of being run over by a car is to fit cars with airbags.
Yes, the new Subaru Forester launched, and in Japan only, it comes with an airbag that's designed to cushion your head should you get hit. Now, I'm not saying it's a bad thing, Dan, but please, can we just let this not be the only solution?
Well, I mean, you'd be relieved, wouldn't you, if you're sort of just rolling underneath a car and an airbag hits you. Thank goodness it's one of those cars.
Well, yeah, it's true, yeah.
Finally this week, we learned that the prestigious Amstel Gold Race was an absolute cracker. Today, Pogacar showed that he is almost human after the seemingly unprecedented situation of getting caught once away on his own. And whilst he almost still won the sprint anyway, but he didn't in the end, did he? Matthias Skelmoser rode brilliantly throughout and pipped him to the line.
Yeah, no disrespect to Skelmoser, but I did not see that one coming.
I don't think anybody did.
To be fair,
not least Skelmoser.
That's it, looking at his reaction after. He didn't see it coming either. Now, the women's race was also won by another outsider, Misha Bredewold. She won a brilliantly attacking edition with most of the five-star favourites finishing some minutes down.
Yes, 23 women went up the road and none of the big five-star favourites, like you said, were in it. But while all eyes were on the roads in Northern Europe, as they always are, I guess, at this time of year, there was what we think was a very important race taking place in the US, Levi's Gran Fondo.
Yes, now you can be forgiven for not knowing about this, and even if you have heard about it, you may be questioning its importance, but we think it's definitely worth taking note.
Yeah, indeed. Firstly, though, a bit of backstory. Gravel racing, obviously, is thriving over in North America, so that's not news.
No.
Races like Unbound or SBT sell out in minutes, and there are tons and tons of smaller grassroots events all over as well. However, on the flip side, the road racing scene over there has struggled in comparison.
Yes, now there is still loads to shout about at local level, but in terms of top-tier road racing, there's basically none, isn't there? Certainly nothing that would attract a World Tour team, although there is a potential Tour of Colorado being teased for 2026, and the Maryland Classic may make a return in 2025.
Well, I think that's on. They've managed to get three World Tour teams to participate in the Maryland Classic this year.
Oh, really?
I haven't got that one, but I would like to see the Colorado Classic return as well. Anyway, the reasons for this dearth of top-level racing, well, they're many and varied, aren't they? But why are we talking specifically, then, about Levi's Fondo?
Well, it's doing things differently, and we think it could be a blueprint of how road racing could and perhaps should look outside of the elite echelons of the sport. Because let's not kid ourselves, traditional road racing isn't thriving like it used to in other parts of the world either.
We should probably explain how Levi's Fondo is doing things differently, shouldn't we?
Yes.
Firstly, as the name suggests, it's based on the long-standing Gran Fondo that ex-pro Levi Leipheimer has been running for quite a long time now.
Yeah.
Has a beautiful and by all accounts very tough route, the longest of which is worthy of any pro race in Europe, really. 221 kilometres with 4,500 metres of climbing.
That is punchy, isn't it?
It's not easy.
No. Now, this year, though, they have gone full gas in promoting a race as well as the mass participation element. They even broadcast it live on YouTube. Now, this, too, isn't new, per se. The successful NYC Fondo runs on similar lines with a pro race starting ahead of the amateurs, and the Cape Town Cycle Tour has been in it for years, I did it in 2009, Dan. But what I love is that Levi's race is unsupported.
It is. So basically, they've removed the requirement for having complicated and expensive, I guess, team support and taken it out of the race and followed the lead from gravel racing, really, where they've effectively levelled the playing field.
Yeah, now it sounds simple, and it is, but genuinely, I'm really excited about this, right? So unsupported road racing, meaning that everyone starts as equals in everything but fitness. Now, I think it'll have people choosing equipment differently, employing different tactics, and generally giving things a pleasingly old school vibe.
There is that to it, isn't there?
Yeah.
Yeah, Levi's means business, it seems, doesn't it? Now, they managed to attract a top-level field, in part by stumping up one of the biggest prize funds in one-day road racing. So there's $25,000 on offer for the winner of the women's, and then the same exactly for the men's as well.
To put it in context, Paris-Roubaix, the most prestigious one-day race in the world, awards only €30,000 for the win for the men, and the women get €10,000 less, so €20,000.
Right, so you get more for winning Levi's Fondo as a female. We should say as well that as well as prize money parity, there is parity of distance between the men and women at Levi's Fondo.
Yeah, that's really cool, isn't it? So competing on the same course, yeah. Now, prize money itself doesn't change anything for the vast majority of participants who will not be getting any, unfortunately. But by drawing top riders, I think you add an element of prestige to an event. And because this is a mass participation race, you can therefore directly compare yourself to the pros as you would in a gravel race, but in a way that you can't, even in something like L'Étape de Tour, which is, of course, a mass participation ride on a stage of the Tour de France each year, but which, yeah, because of all the added infrastructure from the Tour de France, just doesn't compare, does it?
No, it's very difficult to compare, but like I said, on the day itself with something like this, you can. Fondos and sportives have always existed, of course, in this grey area of cycling, in that for some, they're competitions, for others, just a challenge to compete. But this format hasn't been widely copied outside of mainland Europe.
Yeah. Now, to run a Fondo as a race would, I would imagine, definitely require an increase of planning and investment in terms of marshalling and police costs. But to the best of my knowledge, Levi's isn't run on closed roads. And so riders know this and race accordingly, right? And it's the same, importantly, again, for everyone.
Yeah. I think we should point out that we're not for 1 minute suggesting that the Tour de France or this weekend's Liège-Bastogne-Liège change their formats and ban team cars. Although now I've said that, that would be quite interesting, wouldn't it?
It would be pretty interesting, wouldn't it? I mean, it is actually quite a mouth-watering prospect, isn't it? All right, we'll move on. No, as we said, this isn't about changing top-level racing. It's about trying to harness the attraction of gravel racing and then bringing it back to road and therefore reinvigorating the sport. Because at the moment, gravel racing, to my mind, is seen as the approachable, easy way of getting into cycling competition. But actually, when you think about it, road is way more accessible than gravel. Isn't it, really? And or at least it should be, anyway.
I think historically it has been, hasn't it? I mean, if I take the UK as an example, which is the place I know the best, obviously, having grown up here racing, you had a lot of off-the-road circuits, tarmacked, but not on public roads, which were an easy way to get into road racing in the first place and great races themselves. But as the years have gone on, particularly sort of south of the Midlands, it's been very difficult and very expensive to put road racing on in this country due to the increased insurance, and it's the same in many countries the world over, isn't it? So it does make, I think it puts a lot of organisers off, and I don't know which came first, the added expenses of entering a race or the dwindling participants, but we have had a few stark years in the UK, despite having more top-level pros than ever before.
We have. So I don't think this is going to replace like evening criteriums or local road races. I think what this does is offers like these kind of, you know, premium experiences that would attract people that aren't interested in actually racing. Do you know what I mean? It's that like mass participation element, a bit like you would get if you turned up to the Boston Marathon or the London Marathon.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like there's people on the start line that are running 2 hours, 3 minutes.
Yeah, it's a very good comparison.
Really? And it feels like it works. So yeah. Why not do it? Yeah. I mean, yeah, there have been examples of this, like we said, all over the place. But I don't know, I feel quite optimistic about this one with that unsupported vibe. That makes it totally different.
Maybe we should just copy him. GCN's Fondo, in Wales somewhere.
See, yeah.
If it's working for Levi,
That's it. Watch this
probably
space.
Won't work for us.
you get out of racing it because you'll be commentating.
Oh, yeah, true.
That's lucky.
Yeah, I'll do the finish line commentary.
Right, anyway.
Under an umbrella.
Well, yeah, it will be raining, unlike California, which looked delightful. What do you lot think? Would you be interested in a mass participation road event if you're up against the pros who are unsupported just like you? Do you think it's the future, or do you think maybe gravel is still... it's on a charge.
Yeah, it's the present and the future.
And now it's time for Cycling Shorts.
Cycling Shorts now, and we're going to start with the news that Marianne Vos has signed a lifetime contract with Visma Lisabike.
Which, from what we understand, means she'll be racing for them until the day she decides to retire. And there are no signs of that coming anytime soon.
Yeah, now Wout van Aert is the only other rider to sign a lifetime contract in cycling, we think, isn't he?
That is correct. He signed that contract last September, and since then, he's not won a single road race.
I mean, there isn't any need to win a road race when you've got a lifetime contract, is there? I mean, I don't know what the thinking behind it is, but I can't see how it's good for anyone other than the rider.
No, me neither. I mean, if Marianne Vos doesn't win another road race in her career, I think we can just basically say lifetime contracts are not a good idea.
No, basically.
She's won 255 road races so far.
Right, moving on. Some bad, but unfortunately inevitable news for US cyclists. A number of manufacturers have been forced into passing at least some of the new... are they actual tariffs or proposed tariffs or, like, threats of tariffs?
At this point, aren't they?
I don't know. Anyway, I've lost track. Anyway, effectively, you're going to have to pay more.
Mm. Yeah, Trek and Specialized are obviously two of the biggest bike manufacturers in the world. We're amongst the first to announce price rises to their dealers. So Trek are, with immediate effect, raising the price of most of their models, though they have said they are trying to keep the cost of their baseline models fairly similar to before.
Yeah, Specialized approach is slightly different. They're adding a simple 10% tariff line to their invoices to both retailers and customers. So both can clearly see where the difference in price comes from. I think that's just e-bikes at the minute, isn't it, with Specialized?
One e-bike model, yeah, but I'd imagine it's going across all of their models shortly. Such a kick in the teeth, though, really, isn't it? Both for an industry that was already struggling and to the consumers, many of whom felt they were already paying over the odds for bikes at the moment.
And it's really bad news for smaller brands as well. Trek and Specialized are big enough to weather the storm to some degree, you'd think, even though they've been weathering storms now for, 4 years.
Yeah.
But many don't have deep pockets, do they, really? In fact, there was a mountain bike brand, Revel, announced they were shutting their operations last week.
You'd imagine the Gary Fisher brand should be okay, shouldn't it? Because it is owned by Trek, of course.
The Gary Fisher brand should be okay because it stopped existing in 2010.
Have they stopped?
I mean, yeah, 15 years ago, I believe.
Okay. Good job I don't do tech stuff. Yeah. Sometimes I am required, but I have to double-check facts.
Yeah.
2010?
2010, yeah. It was that just after they sponsored me, actually. So I don't know what the link is.
This is supposed to be a seamless segue into something that I'm about to talk about, so it's been anything but in the end. So Gary Fisher is heading up a new e-bike brand called Morel. There you go. Should have just said it straight away.
Yeah, he is indeed, yeah. Now, there aren't many details and specifics out there at the moment of this new brand. For example, we don't know who is supplying the motors.
It's quite a big thing when it comes to e-bikes, isn't it? The motor supplier.
Pretty big, yeah. But there's quite some firepower behind this brand, isn't it? And there is a big selling point, which is around the battery technology, particularly that the bike fully charges in 15 minutes using a standard plug socket, and even faster than that with what they call level M3 chargers.
Didn't say exactly how fast, did it? But faster than 15 minutes is fast, isn't it? So the company is looking to put charging points in places where I guess they'll be used the most, with the aim of taking e-bike commuting to a new level of convenience.
Yeah, I wish them all the best. Like, I mean, it genuinely does sound very innovative on paper. It's the lightest e-bike, I think. Like commutery one, yeah, it was like 30 pounds, which is what, that's like 14
cheap
kilos or something.
Awesome.
Yeah. Well, it is seemingly not super expensive either. I would just say that there is a way of pre-ordering, but before I part with any cash, I would want to see some more meat on the bones.
What motor is using?
Well, yeah, I would want to see a working prototype other than this very nice graphic rendering they can see. Do you know what I mean? Like, it's really exciting, but I'm like...
You probably won't get it as cheap then. It's like, well, if you don't trust us, you'll have to pay full price.
Well, I know, but I... Depends how much a risk taker you are, doesn't it? But yeah.
Mm. Right, some more tech news for you now. And Colnago obviously released a new bike last week with the V5 RS, which is an update to Tadej Pogačar's all-concrete, I think we can say, yes, V4 RS.
Yeah, so this new one is, surprise, surprise, more aero. But most significantly, it's now the lightest Colnago ever with a frame weight of just 685 grams.
Sorry, Alex. You're going to take a look at this one, aren't you, this week?
We are, yeah.
As well as the Mega Aero Y1 RS.
Yeah.
A video which will be out for you this coming weekend.
That's it, head to head. Now, a bit of Zwift news. Firstly, for those of you with a Zwift Ride, which is their indoor bike, you can now purchase adjustable cranks. So the ones they were originally supplied with were 170 millimetres long, but the new cranks give options from 160 to 175. So there we go. Yes. You did some Zwifting last week.
Oh, I did. Glad you noticed
I noticed everything. Yeah.
Did an FTP test, as you know, last Tuesday, the results of which you'll be able to see on a video this week. And then I did a Zone 2 ride on Zwift on Sunday and a further 10 one-minute efforts max on Monday, yesterday, plus two further road rides as well.
Crikey.
Thank you for asking.
Goodness me. Someone's taking their Manchester to London ride serious. Yeah. Did you do a new route at all?
No, I forgot that Zwift had the new route, actually. Oh. Yeah, so they've added 10 new sections, or no, 8 new sections, I think it is, to their France route, many of which are cobbled. And that was out in time for Paris-Roubaix, wasn't
it? You're not a massive fan of flat cobbles, are you?
No, prefer the climbs.
Yeah. Now, we've got a few winners to announce from our recent giveaway, courtesy of Precision Fuel and Hydration, each winning a $100 gift card, or equivalent thereof, in your own currency. So, well done to
Thomas Dyer, Zane Salim, and Chris Brown.
Congratulations to you three. And now, would you believe it, we've got another giveaway. Straight off the back of that, this time in conjunction with Redshift.
So up for grabs is a Redshift cockpit bundle, which basically means the bar of your choice, either the kitchen sink or the top shelf, plus bar tape, grips, handlebar bag, and ShockStop Pro Stem.
Yes. Now, many of these products are ones that Connor and Ollie were talking about in that video about higher handlebars. Connor's obsessed with...
He is, isn't he?
Suspension stem, high handlebars. He's all in. Absolutely loves it. Anything for a bit of comfort for Connor. You can enter from wherever you are in the world, which is great. You've got just under 2 weeks to do so. So entries close at 10 BST on Friday, the 2nd of May. And we'll announce the winner on a GCN show soon after that. How do they enter? Click on the link in the description.
There's a link in the description just down below. So we'll just tell you to everyone, good luck. Right, we're going to finish Cycling Shorts this week with news of the passing of British cycling legend Barry Hoban, who passed away last Saturday at the age of 85.
Yeah, a legend, like you say, but also a stalwart and a pioneer. He was one of the first cyclists from Britain to head to Europe and be competitive with the best in the world. He won 8 Tour de France stages over a 19-year career and also beat Eddie Merckx and Roger de Vlaeminck to win Gent-Wevelgem in 1974.
It's quite something, that, isn't it? Two of the best cyclists that have ever existed. Yeah, he really paved the way, basically, for a lot of British pros who've since followed in his footsteps, or at least tried to. So thanks for everything you did for the sport, Barry. May you rest in peace. Next up, hack /bodge of the week. We love it when you get involved in this part of the show because it means we have this part of the show. If you don't, we don't. All you need to do is go to globalcyclingnetwork.com/uploader, submit your hacks and bodges, either your own or those you've seen out and about. The first one this week comes in from Henry's Moustache, don't you know?
Yes.
I was scrolling on Instagram and came across this gem, essentially a battery made from 2 lemons, bits of wire, pennies, and a couple of nails to power an electric SRAM shifter. Not something I think is the most efficient or effective, but it's a fun science experiment.
That is bonkers. I sort of wish I'd had time to Google what this was all about, but homemade battery out of lemons.
All you need to know is no zip ties, no 3D printing.
Well, I mean, that might be a 3D printed lemon holder, mightn't it?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
No, good point.
Now, Dan, you said you can submit anything. Are we allowing someone to scroll on Instagram and spotted something from Jensen USA and outside Brendan?
I reckon so, I just encourage our viewers to continue doom scrolling to add to the content.
No, I think we should say this, like, this is not allowed.
Are you calling this out, are you?
I feel like that's, you know, I mean, not only is the copyright issues, but I feel like, you know, you need to have seen it or done it. and seeing it is like Instagram doesn't count.
Fair enough.
But anyway, yeah, I like that very much. I think it's
very
cool.
I like that you're allowed to stumble upon it in real life and just nick your own photo of something, but don't take anyone else's.
Basically, yeah. Right, next up.
Hack, anyway.
Yeah, go on. James Rotchek, I recently purchased a new Canyon road bike and I needed to find a suitable solution for storing it. I live in Berlin where bike theft is rampant. I've been looking around for somewhere I can store my bike vertically due to limited space. I didn't find anything online, so created and made this custom bike rack. It stores the bike, everything you might need for a ride, has space for clothes, shoes, helmets, sunglasses, the lot. I tell you what, Dan, I'm a fan of that. Simple, but very nicely executed.
I like the shelving. I like it in general because it's neat.
You did say a moment ago that it was just a hook.
Well, it is just a hook for but the front wheel.
Yeah, but some, you know, why overcomplicate it?
I mean, when James says, made this custom bike rack, it stores the bike, everything you might need for a ride, and has space for clothes, shoes, and helmet. Where are they?
Well, there's the shoes. Just there, look.
Oh, yeah, I
very
them.
Neat, yeah.
All I can see is the ski boots on the other bit of shelving. Okay, well, right, hack.
I like James's shelves
and the
helmet. Fun.
The helmet's just covered up by the disc, is it? I think it probably is.
Yeah.
Right, hack.
Yeah, I think that's super cool. I like it. And I particularly
my lack
like
of eyesight sort of prevented me giving it a hack to start with, but now I've taken closer inspection, I'll
yeah.
give it a hack.
Go on, then. This one, next one, I don't think you can mistake there, can you?
No, this is from the Hack Bodge.
Nice.
Bike shop life. Anyway, we work in a bike shop in Belfast. Shout out to Dave Kane Cycles.
Dave Kane Cycles! Wah, wah! We've never done a shout out before, have we?
I don't know, we have, no. Yeah. It was written for us to, you know, I just read out what I'm told to.
Yeah.
Got a bike in. There was a nail in place of the brake pin Whoa. On the front caliper. Gave us a laugh, to say the least.
Oh, my word. I mean, that's a good bodge, that, isn't it? And to be fair, if it's just holding the pads in, I've often wondered how important those pins are. Presumably quite, but you know.
Well, it's better than I originally thought. I first read it as there being a pin instead of the brake pad. Well, that can't be good.
Yeah, no, that would be bad.
It's bodge.
Some of the things that bike shops must see, yeah. My word. Yeah, total bodge there. Right, we got this one from Kev Lever 10. While on a recent trip to what has to be the global cycling capital of the world, Amsterdam, I spotted this excellent light shade inside of the Hard Rock Cafe. I thought it looked great. My missus was not so keen when I suggested a smaller version for our living room. I tell you what, we see a lot of like cycling themed lamps. That one actually is blooming cool.
It is cool, isn't it? There's a lot of chain rings. If you're listening in podcast format, this is a rather large lampshade, isn't
like
it?
Like a giant globe, isn't
yeah.
it? Covered in chain rings.
It's about 10 chain rings deep. You multiply that by how far round they go. Like I said, it's a lot of chain rings. Yeah. I'm going hack, looks amazing.
I wonder whether it's supposed to be like less bike-themed and more like clock-themed. Do you know what I mean? I'm getting vibes of like, I don't know why, around the world in 80 days.
Yeah. Well, I mean, they are bike chain rings, so it's fairly
I mean, they are, yeah, but it's just, you know, at first glance, I'd be like, oh, that looks like the inside of a clock. But there we go. Maybe that's just me. That's a hack from me, even though it was spotted in a Hard Rock Cafe.
Well, I mean, at least it was taken, you know, the person that sends it in was actually there.
Yeah, I spotted this on Instagram. The Hard Rock Cafe Instagram. Yeah. Yeah, no, I like that. That's good.
Hack from both of us. That brings us to the end of Hack and Bodge for another week.
It's time now for Caption Competition, that part of the show where you get a chance to get your hands on a coveted GCN Camelback water bottle. All you've got to do is put a witty caption in the comment section down below that relates to a photo we'll give you in just 1 second.
Last week's photo was from the podium of the men's Paris-Roubaix. This is Mathieu van der Poel and Tadej Pogacar. The winner this week is Stephen Orkley, who put Poggy and Mathieu shown here looking at the right-hand turn ahead.
Now, for podcast listeners, you might need to see this photograph where they're looking in completely different directions.
Yeah.
But that is why it's funny.
It is very good indeed, Steve. Get in touch with us on Facebook with a message and your address and we'll get a bottle sent out to you. We're keeping it simple. We're recording this early on a Tuesday. We normally record it on a Monday, but we had a bank holiday in the UK. So I've just chosen another podium shot from Amstel Gold. I better describe it. Nice. So this is Pogacar, who didn't win, as we mentioned earlier.
Again, second place.
And Evenepoel looking over at him.
He's not signed a lifetime contract, has he?
Pogacar.
Yeah,
just
since
before
Flanders.
Roubaix. It's not been announced yet.
Yeah.
I'll get you started. Hey, Poggy, how does it feel to get silver? Oi, I'm still gold.
Oh, mate, that was actually quite good.
Oh, thank you very much.
Oh, goodness me. Right, OK, well, if you think you can beat that, and I suggest you can't, but give it a try anyway. Stick your caption in the comment section down below.
We will shortly let you know what we've got coming up on the channel this week, but first up, we picked out some comments from last week's video, starting, as ever, with a few from underneath last week's GCN show, which is entitled How a Couple of Idiots Could Ruin Cycling for Everyone. This is, of course, the fan, so-called, who threw a full bead on at Mathieu van der Poel in Paris-Roubaix. Terry Nutkin 3 wrote in to say, how a couple of idiots can ruin cycling for everyone? Isn't this the tagline for every episode of GCN?
I must say, when I saw that one, I did have a chuckle, as I have done.
Very again. Good, Terry.
Yeah, I like that one. D. Murdoch said, this is actually a more serious one now, relating to how you stop said idiots from ruining cycling. He said, it's been known for a while that the likelihood of getting caught, or at least the perception of it, is more effective at stopping people than the severity of the punishment. Now, there are no scientific journals cited, but I'm taking his word for it here. That is quite an interesting thought, basically, about... Well, I suppose the guy is getting caught, isn't he? So maybe you will get caught.
Well, he was kind of forced into handing himself into police by the Matej Mohoric Supporters Club, of which he wasn't actually a member, but he did share a coach with them to the race, and also in the same area. So they were quick to distance themselves from him, saying he's not a member of the Mohoric Supporters Club, but we told him that he has to go and hand himself into police, or else.
Or else.
I don't remember what the potential punishment was going to be. Anyway, Kublai wrote in to say, would not really be a bike race if people didn't try to kill you or walk in your way. Makes the sport more realistic.
Would not really be a bicycle ride, would it? So, I thought that was quite a good one. And then Patrick Halen, now this was an interesting comment, Dan. Si, I've listened to you mentioning your ankles for, I think, 10 years. I think it's mainly Dan who mentions my ankles. I have studied them thoroughly to try to see what you mean. And I'm really curious, because I can't find anything wrong or abnormal with them. Which I thought was really sweet. He said they now deserve a show of their own. I mean, they're certainly big enough for a show on their own, aren't they? But
they could get a lot of subscribers, your ankles, I thought.
They probably could, yeah. Well, size was a measure of success, anyway.
There's nothing really abnormal about size ankles when compared to
an elephant, tree trunk,
some sort of rhinoceros, but compared to your average top level pro cyclist, they're like Cadel Evans-esque, aren't they?
Yes, basically. He was my pin-up boy, my role model as I was growing
up. If he can do it, so can I.
If those ankles can win the Tour, but unfortunately mine couldn't win the Tour de France. But anyway, thank you, Patrick, you're very kind. I'm far too sensitive about my ankles.
Are you not slightly worried about Patrick that you spent that much time sort of checking out your ankles and he didn't even come to a conclusion?
Well, I'm not worried about him now. He said they're all right. I'd be worried if there was like a critique of them. There's not much I can do about them, really.
Okay.
So, there we go.
Well, Alex Payton could have done with your ankles, couldn't he, at the Sea Otter Classic?
Could have done with a lot more from me, Dan, yeah.
He dissed you at the start of that video, saying, I'm going to get advice from somebody else because Si only managed to finish 64th last year. And spoiler alert, Alex didn't do as well as you this year.
No, he didn't. He was 88th. Although, there was quite a debate in the comments section.
Yeah.
So, Nigel Gittin said, in hindsight, maybe you should ask Si how he finished 64th. to which a number of people underneath, including Road Cyclist 1, said, this is a completely different course from what Si rode. Also, the competition is almost twice what it was then. Now, I don't know, but I think it's unlikely that it was twice as hard as it was last year. Si would finish well over 100+ if he were to have raced this. So, anyway.
But congrats on putting your foot in your mouth. I mean, they couldn't get a more stereotypical online modern comment, really, could you?
No.
Anyway.
Absolutely brilliant, yeah.
writes, also underneath the same video, as Maya put, this is what we want. Love to see the show's host throw it down. Nice perspective on the race. Good work. Jeebin, but Alex, we love you and you did amazing. Us mortals ride our bikes and continue to dream of having your fitness and abilities. We will be Alex on our rides. Carlos Fusco put, great job. And we're cheering you on from Nicaragua. Crikey, I'm not very good at... Crikey. Not very good at weeding.
No, you know? Not really. Nicaragua. I thought that was super cool. Shout out from Nicaragua.
Yeah, not bad, is it?
Absolutely, yeah, super cool. And then one or two interesting comments under the heat training video. So, again, this is another of Alex's. Dana said, thanks for more great content. I appreciate you interviewing experts and being upfront about sponsors. Obviously, without sponsors, you couldn't do this. So keep up the awesome work at GCN. I live in the Midwest, where the heat crushes people during sports activities every year, especially at Unbound. Hope to see you there, Alex. Mm. He will be a sweaty mess, basically.
He will be, yeah.
But you will see him.
We were... He did a video fairly recently, Alex, didn't he, where he said, can I finish top 20 at Unbound? And you and I were joking the other day, saying maybe we should take the top 20 part out. But can I finish Unbound?
Yeah.
We haven't actually mentioned that to Alex. Don't think he watches the GCN show, does he?
No,
so,
he doesn't. No. We'll just keep it amongst ourselves. Yeah, don't tell him. Yeah, and then underneath the strength training video, by the way, lots of really lovely comments, so thank you for those. I like this one. From Randy Hale. I've been weight training and cycling since 1995. I'm now 68 years old. The benefits from weight training have kept me healthy and strong, and I think a little bit can go a long way. So there you go. Oh, and I like that bit. Keep up the good work, young man. You're doing just fine. Mm. I will take that, Dan. I will absolutely take that.
Bergen Nicholas. He would like to see a buff Cy Richardson, he says now, for some reason. You mentioned that at the start, didn't
you? I did, yeah. And as I said at the start, the world isn't ready for that.
Well, he is. So,
Nicholas
is waiting. He's more than ready.
One out of millions. And actually, this last
millions?
One... Millions? Well, I mean, millions of people.
How many subscribers has your ankle page got?
Like I said, man, they're big. serious point now, please, Dan. There were a few, more than a few comments, actually, from female viewers, of which Nancy Heller was one, talking about post-menopause. So she says, as a post-menopausal 56-year-old female, weight training twice a week has been a game changer. The importance for overall health, including muscle mass retention, reduce of fracture / osteoporosis, cognitive function are all proven benefits. However, for me, the most important benefit is how I perceive myself. I feel strong and confident in my changing body, which is super cool. Yeah. So, absolutely. Thank you very much for your comment. And also, like I say, a fair few others talking about the importance of weight training in post-menopause.
Great stuff, Nancy. And thank you for all your comments over the last week.
Yeah.
Right. Coming up on GCN this week, starting on Thursday, you'll be able to see me in pain because I did an FTP test last week. That will be coming out for you, like I said, on Thursday. Won't reveal the result here, but you'll just see it on Thursday. And I've got an aim of, like, how far can I get it up before Manchester to London? I mean, a lot of people, I think, watching will be wondering why I'm doing quite such short, intense efforts for what is the longest ride I've ever done in my life. But like I said a few weeks ago, my theory is the higher I get my FTP, the easier it's going to feel during that ride.
Yeah, I think you're right,
lower
mate.
Much lower power.
Sorry, I'm still smirking about your earlier comment there, but we'll one or two other puerile idiots may be smirking as well. Yeah. On Saturday, V5 RS versus Y1 RS, as we said, the new Colnagos, head-to-head. Basically, how does Tadej Pogacar choose what to ride every morning?
It's quite a nice choice to have, isn't it?
Not bad, is it? Not bad. And then Sunday, cannot wait to see this. So Ollie was over in Taiwan for the Taipei Bike Show. He was joined by Connor to ride the length of Taiwan end-to-end. It truly is a cycling paradise, but a tough one at that. I think it was something like 780Ks with like 15,000 metres of climbing. Yeah, pretty punchy.
Quite a lot of rain.
It did rain a little bit, which is unusual for Taiwan at this time of year, but not unusual for Ollie because he's been rained on everywhere he's gone.
He has, hasn't he?
Yeah, yeah.
Poor Ollie was on holiday in Nice last week and it was the worst weather ever.
Yeah, Nice, it rained. South of Spain, it rained. Yeah. And Taiwan, it rained. It was beautiful when he was at the show and then as soon as he went outside, it rained. So, there we go.
Poor Ollie. Right, that's the end of this week's GCN show. Thank you for watching. We'll be back in same time next week.
Yep, see you then.